Oh, and help yourself to something in the galley if you want. Especially whichever of you was stuck out there watching my ship today. Stakeouts can be such thirsty work. Just put everything back in the cooler when you're done, okay? We'll see you later. Which is not to say you'll see me, of course.
There was a soft click, and the recording stopped.
This woman is nuts, Cliff declared, looking around. Does she have any idea at all who she's dealing with?
I don't know, Navitz said, eyeing the datapad thoughtfully. She implied she knows we're Imperials, but she never once said anything about our covers here, or whether she even knows she's talked to us.
Cliff grunted. So she's fishing.
She's fishing, Navitz nodded. More to the point, she's fishing alone. If she had any proof or official backing, she'd have had more than just trick lights and a recording waiting here. Sounds like her plan now is simply to draw us out.
So what do we do? Cliff demanded. Keep after her?
Navitz rubbed his chin.
No. I think we'll back off, he said slowly. If she starts wandering into close again, we can reconsider. But with Antilles and his partner gone, she's not going to be all that effective.
He peered down the corridor toward the flight deck.
Unless she's still in here somewhere, trying to get a look at us, he amended,
hefting his blaster.
In which case, she's automatically vaped.
Now you're talking, Cliff growled.
Just watch it, Navitz warned. She might have set up some booby traps.
They were there another hour, running a fine mesh over the ship, before they finally gave up and left. Only three or four times after the recording shut off did they get close enough to the comlink hidden in the datapad for Miranda to pick up anything of what they were saying. In most of those brief snippets, they were sounding pretty irritable. Watching through her spy hole from inside the empty crate she'd set up on top of a stack of similar ones 50 meters from her ship, she watched the two of them slip out again and into the bustle of activity. So she'd been right. She and Corrin and Wedge. The Imperials were here, and they were planning something nasty. And they were sufficiently rattled that they were willing to risk a murder right in the middle of the spaceport. That was very interesting. And unless her ear had totally failed her, that careless and highly unprofessional conversation beside her rigged datapad had given her their identities, the earnest but stupid proprietors of the Exoticalia Pet Emporium. Of course, knowing was one thing. Proving was something else entirely. And for possibly the first time in her life, that vast legal gap was going to work against her. The Imperials had joined the pedestrians on one of the major walkways now, their postures and strides midway between casual and decisive. Imperial intelligence, most likely, or even some of the folks from the ubiquitous underhanded tricks division. Either way, definitely experts who knew what they were doing. Unfortunately, the New Republic rep in Drev Starn wouldn't be interested in any of this without proof. Neither would the Bothans. In fact, come to think of it, there were probably still a couple of warrants outstanding against her on Bothawee. That definitely let out the Bothans. The Imperials were gone now, vanished toward the western entrance, and presumably out of the spaceport. Still, as Miranda had long ago learned, presumably never fed the sabacc pot or took the pets for a walk. Her new playmates might have just been irritated enough by her sneaking out on them to have left a spotter behind. Opening her pocket flask, she took a sip of the tangy blue liqueur and consulted her chrono. Another 2 hours, maybe three, and it should be safe to move. Taking another sip, she resealed the flask and settled herself comfortably against one of the corners of the crate. It was a long time since she dealt with an opponent of this caliber, and as long as she was stuck in here anyway, she might as well start working out her next move.
It's so good to hear your voice again, Han,
Leia's voice came over the Lady Luck speaker, and there was no mistaking the relief in her tone.
I've been so worried about you.
Hey, hon, it was no big deal,
Han assured her, only fudging the truth a little. There would be plenty of time to tell her the whole story of their little trip to Bastion when he could hold her hand while he did it. And besides, the last thing he wanted to put out on a holonet call, even an encrypted one, was the fact that Grand Admiral Thrawn was indeed still alive.
The point is that we got in and out okay, and we're heading home, he went on.
I'm glad you're safe,
she said, a cautious hope creeping into her voice.
Did you... I mean...
We got it, Han told her. At least I think we got it.
There was a short pause.
What does that mean?
It means we got what we went for, Han said. And it all looked all right to me. But, well, there were a couple of complications. Let's leave it at that for now, okay?
Okay,
she said reluctantly, clearly not happy about letting it go like that, but as aware as he was of the limitations of Holonet security.
But don't go to Coruscant. I'm on my way to Bothawe.
Bothawe?
Yes. I was heading for Coruscant when I found out President Gaverson was there, trying to mediate this whole Warfleet thing.
Han said, frowning at the speaker. Considering he'd left her on Pakrik Minor 10 days ago, she should have already been on Coruscant, not just on her way there. Had something happened with that meeting with Bel Iblis?
Your visitor get delayed or something?
He asked obliquely.
The visitor arrived right on schedule, only it wasn't exactly who I was expecting, and then I wound up taking a little side trip.
Han felt his hands curl into fists.
What kind of side trip?
He demanded. If someone had tried to hurt her again.
Are you all right?
No, I'm fine,
she hastened to assure him.
Things just went differently than I was expecting, that's all. It's all tied in with why I have to talk to Gaverson right away.
Holonet security.
Yeah, all right. We'll head for Bothawe, Han said. It'll be another couple of days before we can get there.
That's fine. I won't be there until tomorrow myself.
Han grimaced. It would have been better if he could have gotten there ahead of her. From everything he was hearing, this guy over Bothawe was a flashpoint, just begging to happen.
Well, you be careful, Leia. All right?
I will. I'm just glad you're safe. I'll call Gaverson right away and give him the good news about your mission.
And tell him I'm not going to give it to him unless he promises you some real vacation time when this is over,
Han warned.
Absolutely.
Okay. I love you, Leia.
He could almost hear her smile.
I know,
she said in their private joke.
I'll see you soon.
With a sigh, Han cut off the comm. Another 2 days to Bothawe, with Leia getting there a day ahead of them. Maybe Lando could get a little more speed out of this crate. He swiveled his chair around.
So how's Leia?
Lando said from the bridge doorway.
She's fine,
Han assured him, studying his friend's face. There was something very unpleasant lurking there behind his eyes.
Sounds like she had more than just a straight run home from Pakrik Minor, though, and we have to change course for Bothawe to meet her. What's up?
Trouble.
Lando said darkly, jerking his head over his shoulder.
Come on back a minute.
Lobot and Mogid were waiting in the aft control room when he and Lando arrived, sitting on opposite sides of the computer table. Lobot just looked like Lobot, but Mogid's antennae were twitching in a way Han had never seen a Verpine do before. And lying on the table between them was the data card Thrawn had given them.
Don't tell me,
he warned as Lando picked up the data card and slid it into the computer reader.
You said it was clean.
We thought it was,
Lando said, pulling up the Ka-Moss document on the large plotting display.
But then Mogid thought of something else to try.
He pointed to the display.
Turns out it's been altered,
whole string of Corellian curses ran through Han's mind. None of them was adequate for the situation.
Altered how?
He asked, just for the record.
You have to ask, Lando growled. The list of the Bothans involved in the attack has been changed. The one thing we absolutely needed.
Han stepped closer, peering at the display.
You're sure?
He asked, again, just for the record.
Mogit is,
Lando said, looking down at the Verpine.
It's a masterful job, but there's some tricks the Verpines have come up with over the years.
He pointed at the display.
Remember how surprised we were when we first looked it over and saw how many of the top Bothan families were implicated? Well, now we know why those names are there.
A little something to stir the pot a little more, Han said with a grimace. And to make the rest of the New Republic trust the Bothan leadership even less than they already do.
You got it, old friend.
Lando pulled out one of the other chairs and sat down.
Which means we're right back at square one.
Han pulled out a chair for himself.
We're not even that lucky,
he said glumly.
I already told Leia we've got the document.
You don't think she'll keep that information to herself?
Normally, yes,
Han said heavily.
Unfortunately, she already said she was going to give Garrison the good news.
And he won't keep it to himself?
Han shook his head.
He's on Barthawee trying to keep a war from starting. And he's not the type to not use every tool he's got.
So in other words, we're going to show up at Barthawee with everyone expecting us to be the heroes of the day.
Lando shook his head.
Where's an Imperial ambush when you need one?
I wouldn't joke about that if I were you,
Han warned him.
You can bet that Thrawn will be keeping the Empire off our backs on this one. But there are a lot of people on our side who won't want to see the Bothans getting the chance to slip off the hook.
Lando winced.
I hadn't thought about that. Though come to think of it, no.
What?
I was just thinking about what Thrawn said about Phalia's people stealing those Zerol sniper blasters,
he said slowly.
But if he was lying about the Kaa Mas document...
Doesn't necessarily mean he was lying about that, too,
Han said.
For that matter, we don't have any proof that Thrawn was even the one who changed those names.
Lando snorted.
You don't really believe that, do you?
Someone's going to bring it up,
Han pointed out.
I can guarantee that one.
Lando muttered something else under his breath.
This just gets messier and messier. So what do we do?
Han shrugged.
We go to Barthawee on schedule and pretend nothing is wrong. Maybe the Bothans really do know who was involved. If they do, maybe we can bluff them into coming clean.
And if they don't, or we can't?
Han got to his feet.
We've got 2 days to come up with something else. Come on, let's go turn this crate toward Barthawee.
That's it,
Tyrs said with grim satisfaction, waving at the display.
They've come.
I'm not convinced, Deesra growled, peering at the computer-enhanced image on the display. Fine, so whoever they are seem to be using TIE fighter technology. That doesn't prove a thing.
They flew past Bastion,
Tyrs pointed out.
Clearly looking us over. And if we've never seen anything like this anywhere else...
That doesn't even prove it was from the unknown regions, Deesra sniffed. Let alone that it was Park or the Hand of Thrawn or whoever.
And Bastion is where Thrawn was last reported being seen.
Tyrs finished with a note of finality in his voice.
Doubt all you like, Your Excellency, but I can tell you right now that the scheme has worked. Thrawn's old allies are finally nosing around the bait.
I hope you're right, Deesra said. With the Barthawee flash postponed, and with Pelion probably springing Vermel from Rimsey Station right at this moment...
I told you not to worry about that.
Tyr said with some asperity.
There's no way he can hurt us.
Who can't hurt us?
Flim's voice asked from off to the left. Dees returned to see Flim emerge from the secret door. The con man had been doing a lot of that lately, he'd noticed, skulking around quietly, eavesdropping on his two partners, as if he didn't trust them.
Admiral Pelion,
Tyrs told him.
We were just speculating that he and Colonel Vermel will probably be coming by at some point to demand an explanation for how we've been mistreating them.
And were you also speculating about that alien ship that buzzed past Bastion a couple of days ago?
Flim demanded.
Or were you going to wait until the Hand of Thrawn knocked on the palace gate before you mentioned it?
I can assure you that the first thing they do will not be to show up here in person,
Tyr said.
These are very cagey people, Admiral. Which, considering the card they're holding, they have every right to be. No. Their first contact will be a cautious transmission from somewhere in deep space, where they can make a fast escape if they decide it's necessary.
I fail to see how that helps us any, Flim said icily. One way or the other, they're still going to want to talk to Thrawn.
Of course they are,
Tyrs explained patiently.
But calling in from off-planet allows me to take a message for you and to shake some useful information out of them along the way. Trust me, Admiral. I've been planning for this moment for a long time.
Flim grimaced.
It's going to be very comforting if Park sees straight through it and blasts Bastion to rubble.
Tyrs shook his head.
These people were extremely loyal to Thrawn, Admiral,
he said.
No matter how cautious and skeptical they appear on the surface, they want Thrawn to have survived Bilbringi. You're a con man. Surely you understand the effect wishful thinking has on a target.
No, it's very useful, Flim grumbled. It also means they're twice as dangerous when you finally pull the rug out from under them.
Speaking of dangerous, did either of you know that General Bel Iblis has disappeared? Tyrs and Deesra exchanged glances.
What are you talking about?
Deesra asked.
We got a message from the strike team on Barthui a couple of hours ago,
Flim said, strolling forward and tossing a data card onto the desk.
He said a couple of Rogue Squadron pilots who'd been sniffing around had suddenly pulled out and left the system. He suggested that might mean Bel Iblis was up to something.
Could be.
Tyrs nodded, stepping to the desk and picking up the data card.
Let me check on it.
I already did, Flim said, pulling over a chair and sitting down. The official story is that Bel Iblis is out at Kothless, putting together a new Republic force to protect Barthui. But if you start poking through the data, you can't find any evidence that he's anywhere near Barth in space.
How did you learn about all this?
Deesra interrupted. Flim lifted his eyebrows in polite surprise.
I'm Grand Admiral Thrawn, Your Excellency,
he reminded him.
I called intelligence and asked.
Did you get a written report?
Tyrs asked him. He had the data card in his datapad now and was skimming through it.
It's at the end of that record, Flim told him. They were quite helpful, actually. Asked me if I'd like someone to do a flyby around Kothless and see what they could find out.
Waste of time,
Tyrs said, his voice starting to sound a little odd.
If Kothless is a cover story, Bel Iblis will have made it far too vac-tight for any casual flyby to pick up on.
That's exactly what I told them, Flim said smugly. I'm starting to pick up a genuine feel for tactics, if I do say so myself.
Don't flatter yourself,
Tyr said absently, gazing at the data pad.
And in the future, kindly do not interact with anyone without Moff Deesra or myself present. Now be quiet and let me think.
Deesra watched the guardsman's face, an unpleasant sensation creeping over him. Tyr seemed to be doing more and more of this sort of thing lately.
this staring off into space, as if in some kind of trance, as he thought? Was the pressure and strain starting to get to him? Or had he always been this way, and Deesra simply hadn't noticed? Abruptly, Tyrsa's head snapped up.
Admiral, you said that the Dulin woman had called one of the Mistral leaders to come talk with us.
Yes, Flim said. Last I heard, she was on her way here.
Have Dulin get in touch with her, and tell her to change course.
Tyrsa instructed him.
Tell her we'll meet with her instead at Yaga Minor.
Yaga Minor? Deesra repeated, frowning.
Yes,
Tyrsa said, smiling tightly.
I believe we may be able to give the Mistral a live demonstration of Thrawn's tactical genius, and help convince Captain Park that Thrawn is indeed back, and deliver a humiliating blow to one of Coruscant's best and brightest in the bargain.
Wait a minute, wait a minute! Deesra protested. You've lost me.
I think he's trying to tell us Bel Iblis is going to be insane enough to hit Yaga Minor,
Flim said, staring in obvious disbelief at Tyrsa. The guardsman inclined his head slightly.
Very good, Admiral. Only it's not insane. It's their very last chance to avert a civil war. Who better to send than Bel Iblis?
I think Flim was right the first time, Deesra said. You're talking about the Kaa Mas document, but they've already got the copy we gave Solo and Calrissian.
But Bel Iblis doesn't know about that.
Tyrsa tapped the datapad.
According to the report, he vanished to the supposed Kothlis build-up 8 days before that traitor Kerib Devist brought his falsified data to the Parshoon Ubiquitous Station, which was how Solo found Bastion. Assuming Bel Iblis has been basically out of contact with Coruscant, and that's the likely situation, he won't know anything about Solo's Bastion trip.
And what if he checks in before he leaves for the attack, and they tell him to stand down?
Deesra countered.
Then we simply impress the Mistral with the size and power of an Imperial Ubiquitous base,
Tyrsa said.
They don't need to know we're expecting an attack until it actually happens.
He looked at Flim.
It's a classic con technique,
he added.
If the target doesn't know what's supposed to happen, he can't be disappointed if it doesn't.
He's right about that,
Flim agreed.
All right, fine, Deesra said. And what if Coruscant changes its mind and sends Bel Iblis to attack Bastion instead?
Tyr shrugged.
On what grounds? We've given them the Kaa Mas document.
Altered?
Which they don't know about, and have no way of proving,
Tyr reminded him.
The point is that if Bel Iblis so much as pokes his nose into this system, they'll be handing us a propaganda weapon they'll regret for years to come. Give me some hollows of an unprovoked New Republic attack on Bastion, and I'll have 1,000 systems seceding from Coruscant in the first month alone.
Besides, Your Excellency, Flim said, with a casual wave of his hand, even if Bel Iblis did hit Bastion, the three of us will still be safe at Yaga Minor. Unless you're so attached to your comforts here, you couldn't bear to give them up.
I was merely pointing out, Deesra said stiffly, that it would look bad for Thrawn to be somewhere else when the Imperial capital was under attack.
Don't worry about it,
Tyrsa said with a tone of finality in his voice.
Bel Iblis won't hit Bastion, and he will hit Yaga Minor. And once we've defeated him, we'll see the Empire's prestige rise considerably.
We might also finally push Coruscant into launching a full-scale attack at us,
Deesra warned. Tyrsa shook his head.
In 5 days, Coruscant will have a civil war on its hands, he said. And long before they're ready to turn any attention this direction, we'll have Park and the Hand of Thrawn.
His eyes glittered.
And this time, there will be nothing that can stop us. Nothing at all.
The corridor was long and drab and gray, lined with equally drab doors. Locked doors, of course. This was a prison, after all. The walls and ceiling were solid metal. The floor a metal grating that gave off a pair of hollow-sounding clinks with every footstep. They were certainly making a lot of those clinks at the moment, Pelion thought, listening to the sound echo off the walls as he strode down the corridor toward the secondary security post just around the corner at the far end. It sounded like a parade, in fact, or a sudden burst of rain on a thin metal roof. And those ahead had taken notice of the commotion. Already four of the guards had poked black-helmeted heads around the corner to see what all the commotion was about. Two of those guards were still visible. The others had ducked back out of sight, presumably to report to whoever was manning the security post. The other two guards had reappeared by the time Pelion reached the corner, all four of them now standing stiffly at full military attention. Without a word or glance, Pelion passed through the group and rounded the corner. Four more guards were standing at attention behind the security post desk, 3 meters in front of an extra-secure-looking cell door. Seated at the desk, gazing up at Pelion, with a mixture of uncertainty and surliness in his face, was a young major. He opened his mouth to speak.
"I'm Admiral Pelion."
Pelion cut him off.
"Supreme Commander of the Imperial Fleet. Open the door."
The major's cheek twitched.
I'm sorry, Admiral, but I have orders that the prisoner is to be kept strictly incommunicado."
For a few seconds, Pelion just stared at him, a glare developed and honed and fine-tuned by long decades of Imperial command.
"I'm Admiral Pelion,"
he said at last, biting out each word, his tone the verbal counterpart of that blade-edged glare. He'd been willing to give the guards the benefit of the doubt, but he had neither the time nor the inclination to put up with any nonsense whatsoever.
"Supreme Commander of the Imperial Fleet, open the door!"
The major swallowed visibly. His eyes flicked away from Pelion to the dozen stormtroopers visible in the corridor behind him, his mind perhaps flicking to the other 12 stormtroopers out of sight around the corner that his guards would have told him about, then came reluctantly back to Pelion's face again.
"My orders come from Moff Deetra himself, sir,"
he said, the words coming out with difficulty. Beside Pelion, the stormtrooper commander stirred.
"Moff Deetra is a civilian,"
Pelion reminded the major, giving him one last chance.
"And I'm countermanding those orders."
The major took a careful breath.
"Yes, sir,"
he said, capitulating at last. Half turning, he nodded to one of the guards. The guard, who had also been eyeing the stormtroopers and had obviously already done the math, showed no hesitation whatsoever. Stepping quickly to the cell door behind him, he keyed it open and moved smartly aside.
"Wait here,"
Pelion told the stormtrooper commander, rounding the desk and stepping into the cell, his pulse pounding in his neck. If Deetra had somehow managed to get word here through the transmission blockade and ordered all witnesses disposed of... Seated at a small table, a hand of single sabacc laid out in front of him, Colonel Vermel looked up, his eyes widening in astonishment.
"Admiral?"
he said, clearly not sure he believed it.
"I..."
Abruptly, he scrambled to his feet.
"Colonel Mez Vermel, Admiral,"
he said briskly.
"Request permission to return to duty, sir."
"Request granted, Colonel,"
Pelion said, not bothering to hide his relief.
"And may I say how pleased I am to find you looking so well."
"Thank you, Admiral,"
Vermel said, heaving a sigh of relief of his own as he stepped around the table.
"I hope you didn't come alone."
"Don't worry,"
Pelion assured him grimly, waving Vermel to the cell door.
"I haven't exactly taken over Rimsey Station, but my men are in position to do so if any of Deetra's people take exception to our leaving."
"Yes, sir,"
Vermel said, throwing an odd look back at him.
Regardless, may I suggest we hurry?
My sentiments exactly.
Pelion agreed, frowning. There had been something in that look. They passed the Major and the guard station without comment and headed around the corner. The stormtroopers, as per Pelion's earlier instructions, fell into full escort array, with 12 each front and rear.
You didn't sound very confident when I mentioned Deesra's people a minute ago,
Pelion commented as they headed down the long corridor.
It may not be Deesra's authority you'll have to go up against, Admiral,
Vermel said, moving a bit closer to Pelion, as if worried about being overheard.
When Captain Dorja brought me aboard after intercepting my ship at Morishim, he said he'd been personally ordered to do so by Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Pelion felt his throat tighten.
Thrawn?
Yes, sir, Vermel said. I've been hoping it was just some trick of Deesra's. I remember you mentioning how totally against these peace talks he was. But Dorja seemed so sure.
Yes,
Pelion murmured.
I've heard some of those rumors myself. He's allegedly been seen by various people in the New Republic, too.
Vermel was silent a moment.
But you haven't actually seen him yourself?
No.
Pelion braced himself.
But I think it's time I did, he said. If he has indeed returned.
You might be in trouble with him for pulling me out,
Vermel pointed out reluctantly, glancing back over his shoulder.
Perhaps it would be better if I went back.
No,
Pelion said firmly.
Thrawn never punished his officers for doing what they sincerely thought was right, especially when he hadn't given them orders or the necessary information to understand otherwise.
They reached the end of the corridor and turned into the main guard nexus. The guards and officers were still sitting where Pelion had left them, glowering under the silently watchful eye of yet another contingent of the Chimera's stormtroopers.
No. We're going to go back to Bastion and see what Moff Deesra has to say about all this.
He continued as they passed through the Nexus and headed toward the landing bay where their shuttles were berthed.
If the rumors are false, then we should have no further trouble with Moff Deesra. Commander Drafe and I have obtained a set of data cards, in Deesra's personal encrypt, no less, that lays out his entire operation. Names, places, and deals, including all his links to the Kavriloo pirates and various shady financiers on both sides of the border.
He felt his face harden.
And including the details of his efforts to incite civil war within the New Republic. That alone should be worth a great deal to us in any future negotiations with Coruscant. It will certainly put Deesra away for a long time.
Yes, sir,
Vermel murmured.
And if the rumors are true?
Pelion swallowed.
If the rumors are true, we'll deal with them then.
Vermel nodded.
Yes, sir.
In the meantime,
Pelion went on conversationally,
your last report is far overdue. I'd like to hear exactly what happened at Morishim.
Chapter 31.
The preparations had taken 6 hours. 6 hours of frantic work, as every flight-worthy spaceship on Exicron was hurriedly fitted out for battle. It took another hour to get the whole ensemble into space, and one more to arrange them into something resembling a combat perimeter. And with that, their estimated 8-hour grace period was over. And now, with the entire Raykos pirate gang on its way, the most pitiful defense fleet Shada had ever seen stood by in trembling readiness to defend its world or die trying. Most likely to die trying.
Report from ground, Admiral David,
Chin reported from the Wild Cards Bridge comm station, looking over at the helm.
Supreme Admiral Dar says we're all in good position. Also says Airfleet ship's ready if pirates get past.
Looming over Dankin, his hands clasped stiffly behind his back, Admiral Trey David nodded.
Very good,
he said, his formal tone nevertheless hinting at a great deal of energy below the surface.
Signal the rest of the fleet to be ready. They could be here at any moment.
Oh, my!
3PO said miserably from beside Shada at the spotting station.
I do so hate space combat.
I can't argue with you on this one, Shada agreed,
looking over her status board. She had wondered at first, wondered with a great deal of suspicion, actually, why Admiral David would ask to direct the battle from the wild card instead of one of Exocron's own combat ships. But her subsequent assessment of those ships and their capabilities had unfortunately provided her with the answer. 8 hours ago, she had snidely suggested to N2 Nee that the Exocron Space Force might find anything more formidable than an occasional smuggler beyond its strength. Never before in her life had one of her offhanded comments nailed the truth so accurately. There was a brush of air beside her.
It becomes a waiting game now, Card said, kneeling down beside her seat. What do you think?
We haven't got a chance,
Shada told him bluntly.
Not unless Ray Koss doesn't bother to send anything bigger than the Corsairs he hit us with at Dayark.
She thought she'd spoken quietly enough for only Card to hear. David apparently had good ears.
No, he'll bring everything he has,
the Admiral assured her.
His full armada, with himself at the head of it. He's wanted to get his hands on Exocron's wealth for a long time.
He smiled tightly.
Besides which, I understand from N2 Nee that you gave him something of a bruised eye at Dayark. For the revenge part alone, he'd be sure to be here.
Shada felt Card's silent sigh as a breath of warm air on her cheek.
Which may ultimately give us our only real chance, he said. If we can pretend to start running, we may be able to draw enough of them away from your forces to deal with the rest.
Possibly,
David agreed.
Not that that would do us personally much good, of course.
It's my fault he's here, Card reminded him. It's not too late for you to transfer to one of the other ships.
At the sensor station, Hasishi suddenly snarled.
Vita, they come.
Vita,
three Sinar Marauder class corvettes. Four Dauphin Discrete class attack cruisers. Four combat modified CSA Eti light operators. And 18 Corsair class attack vessels.
Confirmed,
Shada said, running her eyes over her spotting displays, a sinking feeling in the pit of her stomach. The wild card could take on any one of those ships, or give any two of them a decent fight. But all of them together...
Stand by, turbo lasers,
Card said, rising to his feet beside her.
Turbo lasers standing by,
Shada confirmed, keying targeting information over to the three weapon stations. Just because it was hopeless didn't mean they shouldn't do their best.
Looks like the Corsairs are forming up a screen around the bigger ships.
Captain!
Chin called from the comm.
We're getting call from one of the Marauders. You won't make him an answer.
Shada could feel Card tense.
Yes, go ahead,
he said. Chin keyed the comm.
Hi there, Card.
A familiar gloating voice boomed from the bridge speaker.
I told you you'd see me again before you died, didn't I?
Yes, Cern. You did,
Card agreed, his voice betraying none of the tension Shada knew he was feeling.
I'm surprised you're still alive after that fiasco at Dayark. Ray Koss must be going soft in his old age.
From the background came a distant flurry of Rodian invective.
Ray Koss says he'll maybe save you for last for that one. You like that, huh?
Across the bridge, David cleared his throat.
Ray Koss, this is Admiral Trey David of the Exocron Combined Air Space Fleet,
he said.
Oh, an admiral, huh?
Zern said sarcastically.
You mean this collection of scrap rates a whole admiral?
You're in violation of Exocron space,
David said calmly,
ignoring the insult.
This is your last chance to withdraw peaceably.
Zern laughed.
Oh, that's rich. That's really rich. We definitely gotta save you for last. Then we can cut you all and feed you to the scavengers.
There was another burst of Rodian.
Hey, we gotta go, Card. Time to make the big scrap into lots of little scrap. See you later, Admiral.
The comm keyed off.
They're sure well stocked in the confidence department, aren't they?
Shada murmured.
Yes, Card said. His hand brushed past her shoulder, hesitated, then came back almost reluctantly to rest there.
I'm sorry, Shada,
he said, his voice just loud enough for her to hear. I should never have brought you into this.
It's all right,
Shada said. So this was it. The end of the long journey. Back at the Orowood Tower, facing the Nogri and their blasters, she had been ready to die. Had almost hoped they would overreact and kill her, in fact. The easy way out, she had thought then. Now, facing the incoming pirates, she realized that there were no easy ways out. No way of dying that didn't involve abandoning a responsibility or leaving necessary work undone. She glanced up at Card, gazing out the viewport, his face set in hard lines, or indeed, of leaving friends behind. Distantly, she wondered when in all of this she had started to think of Card as a friend. She didn't know. But it didn't matter. What mattered was doing their best to clean up the mess they'd created here. Shifting her attention back to her displays, she began tagging primary and secondary targets. The leading ships were almost in range.
Signal to all ships,
Admiral David announced.
Pull back! Repeat, pull back!
Shada flashed him a frown.
What?
I said pull back,
David repeated, flashing an almost curious look at her in return.
Which part didn't you understand?
Shada started to say something blistering, choked it back as Card squeezed her shoulder warningly. She was thinking about the fact that the wild card isn't as maneuverable close into a gravitational field as it is in open space, he told David. Neither are most of the ships in your fleet.
Understood, David said. The order remains. Pull back.
Chief?
Duncan asked. Shada glanced up again. Card was looking at David, measuring the man with his eyes.
Transmit the order, Chin,
he said, his tone suddenly thoughtful.
Duncan, go ahead and retreat, but keep us in formation with the other ships. Shada, have the gunners lay down covering fire.
Right.
Shada keyed her intercom, her eyes searching the displays as she tried to figure out what was going on. The usual tactical reason for pulling back toward a planetary surface was to lure an enemy within range of either ground-based weapons or a surface-launched ambush. But every ship Exocron had was already up here, and Hisishi sensor probes would certainly have picked up any ground weaponry powerful enough to reach this far into space. The fleet was beginning to move now, backing toward Exocron as ordered. Some of the armed civilian ships were already firing uselessly at the Corsairs, arrowing silently in at them, wasting energy on out-of-range targets. Shada looked at David, but either he hadn't noticed or didn't especially care what they did. Were the civilians nothing but sacrificial lures to him?
Keep retreating, he said instead. All ships.
The Corsairs were nearly in range. The larger warships formed up behind them now in a straightforward assault line. Little wonder, considering the opposition. There was no need for them to try anything fancy. A straight slice through the ships arrayed against them, then probably a low strafing loop over Exocron's major population centers, taking out Supreme Admiral Dar's pitiful air fleet along the way.
Keep retreating,
David said again.
Tactical display, please.
Hisishi hissed acknowledgement, and the tactical overlay came up.
The defenders were all well within Exocron's gravity field now. Far too late for any of them to change their minds and try to escape to hyperspace. Was that what David was going for? Shada wondered. Putting them in a position where they had no choice but to fight to the death? Even as that disturbing thought occurred to her, the last of the pirates passed within that invisible boundary as well. They were all totally committed to this battle now. Neither the attackers nor the defenders would be leaving Exocron until one side or the other had been destroyed.
Here they come,
David murmured. Shada looked at him, a bitter retort bubbling in her throat. Of course they were coming! And abruptly, Hisashi snarled in disbelief. Shada snapped her attention back to the viewport. The pirates were still there, still coming. But they weren't the ones David had been referring to. Behind the pirates' line, something else had appeared. It was a spaceship, of course. But it was a ship like nothing Shada had ever seen. Roughly ovoid, half again as big as the Marauders, it was covered with thick hull plates that gave it the appearance of some sort of armored sea creature. Conical projections, possibly exhaust ports or thruster pods, jutted out from the hull with no symmetry or pattern that Shada could spot. A magnified image popped up on one of the displays, showing an intricate array of symbols and alien glyphs covering the hull. At close range, the hull itself looked disturbingly like something alive. Someone on the bridge swore, very quietly. Shada looked at the viewport again, just in time to see three more of the ships wink into existence. Not jump in with the characteristic flicker of pseudo-motion of a normal hyperspace jump, but simply appear. And then, almost casually, the first alien ship drove up behind one of Raykos's marauders, and with a glittering, filigreed sheet of blue-green energy discharge, sliced it in half. Hisashi snarled.
What are these?
She demanded.
They're called the Angti Monks, David said, his tone a strange mixture of satisfaction and awe. Alien beings who spend most of their lives near the Cathal Rift. There's not a lot we know about them.
Yet they're coming to your aid, Card pointed out. More significantly, you knew they would.
They hate slavers, David said. Raykos is a slaver. It's very simple.
A second marauder flashed with fire and streaming air as one of the other Angti ships set another of the strange flower blossoms of energy through its side. Ahead of the wrecked ships, the confident battle line collapsed as the remaining attackers swung around to face this new threat that had appeared so unexpectedly behind them. But to no avail. The Angti ships shrugged off the frantic turbolaser fire with ease as they systematically drove through the attackers' ranks, cutting up the larger ships and crushing the smaller ones against their own hulls.
I'm afraid it's not quite that simple, Admiral, Card said to David. According to Bombassa, Raykos has been setting up in this area for the past year. Why did your Angti wait this long to move against them?
As I said, they prefer to stay near the rift, David said. It takes something special to make them come out even as far as Exocron.
In other words, Card said quietly, you needed someone to lure Raykos into their territory. And that someone was us.
David didn't move, but Shada could see a subtle new tension now in his face and posture. Perhaps wondering what would happen to him if a bridge full of hardened smugglers decided to be offended at having been used as bait.
It was your actions we used, Captain Card, he said. Your decision to come to Exocron and your inability to keep Raykos's people from tracking you. It wasn't you, personally, we were using.
His eyes flicked around the bridge.
Not any of you.
For a long moment, the bridge was silent. Shada looked back at the viewport to find the destruction of the pirates nearly complete. Only three of the Angti were visible now, and as she watched, another of them winked out, leaving as mysteriously as it had arrived. The last two alien ships stayed just long enough to finish their task before they too vanished into the darkness.
Je sais, oui, Card said. Is that just you and the rest of the Exocron military?
That's an odd question,
David said obliquely.
Who else could be involved?
Who indeed? Card murmured. Jin, open a transmission frequency to the surface. Threepio, I want a message translated into Old Tarmidian for me.
Shada looked up at him. Card's face was carved from stone, his expression unreadable.
Old Tarmidian? She asked, frowning. Cardass's language?
He nodded.
Here's the message, Threepio. This is Card. I'd like permission to come down and see you again.
Of course, Captain Card,
Threepio said, moving uncertainly over toward the comm station. Chin nodded, and the droid leaned over his shoulder.
Mary Rao Card, Tuliak. Mu Perilon, si Tufriad Mo Subpo Parai.
He looked back at Card.
You understand, of course, that there may not be an answer for some time.
Sepo Prostai,
a voice boomed from the speaker, making the droid jump. A strong, vibrant voice, with no hint of weakness or illness. Shada looked up at Card again, to find his stone-like expression had hardened even further.
Translation?
He asked. Threepio seemed to brace himself.
He said, sir, come ahead.
N2Ni was waiting for them as the wild card put down again in Circle 15 of the Reen Tata City landing field. His casual manner, his cheerful chatter, and the landspeeder ride along with Shada and Threepio toward the pale blue house against the mountain were like a ghostly repetition of Card's last trip through the area a few hours earlier. But there was one big difference. Then the driving emotions behind his mood had been fear and dread, and the morbid contemplation of his own looming death. Now he wasn't sure what his mood was. Puzzlement and uncertainty, perhaps? Tinged with a hint of resentment at having been twitched along like a puppet. And overlaying it all, a renewed haze of dread. Cardass, he couldn't help remembering, had always spoken fondly of predators who played with their prey before finally killing them. The blue house itself was unchanged, just as old and sagging and dusty as it had been before. But as N2Ni led the way to the bedroom door, Card noted that the odor of age and sickness had vanished. And this time, the door opened by itself as they approached. Steeling himself, only vaguely aware that Shada had deftly inserted a shoulder in front of him, the two of them together stepped through the door. The built-in shelves with all their useless knick-knacks and exotic medical supplies were gone. The sickbed and its stacks of blankets were gone. And standing where the bed had been, still just as old, but now as vitally alive as he had been feeble then, was Georges Cardass.
Oh, God!
Cardass said, the vast network of facial wrinkles shifting as he smiled.
It's good to see you again.
Not that it's been all that long, Card said stiffly. I congratulate you on your amazing recovery.
The smile didn't even falter.
You're angry with me, of course,
Cardass said calmly.
I understand that, but it'll all become clear soon. In the meantime...
He half turned and waved at the back wall. And abruptly, the wall was no longer there. In its place was a long tunnel, equipped with four guider rails that faded off into the distance. Just beyond, where the wall had been, an enclosed quad rail car was waiting.
Let me take you across to my real home,
Cardass continued.
It's much more comfortable than this place.
He waved a hand toward the car, and a side door swung invitingly open in response.
Please, after you.
Card looked at the open door, an odd tightness squeezing his heart. Predators playing with their prey.
Why don't just you and I go? He offered instead. Shaeta and Threepio can return to the wild card.
No.
Shaeta cut him off firmly.
You want to show someone around, Cardass? You take me. Then if I decide it's safe, I'll consider letting Card join us.
Really?
Cardass said, regarding her with such obvious amusement that Card found himself cringing. Being amused at someone like Shaeta wasn't an especially healthy thing to do.
Such quick and short-tempered loyalty you inspire in your people, Card.
She's not one of my people, Card told him quickly. She was asked to come along by High Counselor Leia Organa Solo of the New Republic. She has absolutely nothing to do with me or with anything I might have done in the past. I...
Please.
Cardass interrupted, holding up a hand.
I admit this is highly entertaining to watch, but in all seriousness, you're both worrying about nothing.
He looked Card straight in the eye.
I'm not the man you once knew, Talon,
he said quietly.
Please give me the chance to prove that.
Card let his eyes drift away from that unblinking gaze. Predators playing with their prey. But if Cardass truly wanted them dead, it didn't really matter whether they played along or not. All right, he said. Come on, Shaeta.
Excuse me, sir.
Threepio spoke up hesitantly.
I presume you won't be needing me any further.
No, please,
Cardass said, waving the droid forward.
I'd love to sit down later and have a chat with you. It's been such a long time since I've had anyone I could speak Old Tarmidian with.
He smiled over at N2Ni.
N2Ni tries, but it's not the same.
Not really, no.
N2Ni conceded regretfully.
So please, join us.
Cardass added to 3PO.
By the way, you don't also happen to know the Chinchur dialectory, do you?
3PO seemed to brighten.
Of course I do, sir,
he said, pride temporarily superseding nervousness.
I am fluent in over 6 billion for...
Excellent,
Cardass said.
Let's be going, then.
A minute later, they were all in the quadrail car, speeding smoothly down the tunnel.
I mostly keep to myself these days,
Cardass commented.
Well, occasionally I still need to deal with Exocron officialdom. I use that house back there for such meetings. It's convenient, and keeps them from being overawed by my real home.
They know who you are?
Shaeta asked, her tone just short of a demand.
I mean, who you really are?
Cardass shrugged.
They have bits and pieces of my past,
he said.
But as you'll soon see, much of that history is now irrelevant.
Well, before we get to history, let's try some current events,
Shaeta said.
Starting with these Ang-Ti monks of yours, David can spin his anti-slaver slant all he wants. But we all know there's more to it than that. You called them in, didn't you?
The Ang-Ti and I have had some dealings together,
Cardass agreed soberly, his wrinkled face thoughtful. Abruptly, he smiled.
Well, that's history again, isn't it? All in its proper time.
Fine, Shaeta said. Let's try again. David says you didn't use us to lure Ray Koss in. I say you did.
Cardass looked at Card.
I like her, Talon,
he declared.
She has a fine spirit.
He shifted his eyes to Shaeta.
I don't suppose you'd be interested in a new job, would you?
I wasted a dozen years with a smuggling gang, Cardass,
Shaeta growled.
I'm not interested in joining another.
Ah,
he said with a nod.
Forgive me. Here we are.
The tunnel had come to an end in a small, well-lighted room. Cardass popped the door and bounded out as the quadrail slid smoothly to a stop.
Come, come,
he urged the others.
You're gonna love this place, Talon. You really are. Are you ready? Let's go.
Almost bouncing with childlike anticipation.